Do you feel like a shell of yourself after experiencing abuse and or childhood trauma? This is what we're going to be getting into today with our guest, Dawn St. John. Welcome back to the Empath and Narcissist Podcast, where I share messages about spiritual healing from narcissistic abuse with human design. Because I believe your karmic experience has awakened you to your authentic soul. You just need the map to call your power back. I am your host, Raven Scott, and I'm an author and trauma-informed spiritual mentor. Dawn St. John is a psychotherapist and a continuum teacher. He has been engaged in the body, mind, spirit, and relationship world for almost 60 years. He is the author of the award-winning book, Healing the Wounds of Childhood Trauma, and the revised edition, Healing the Wounds of Childhood Trauma and Culture. In this episode, Dawn and I discussed childhood trauma, his rage-filled mother, emotional self-regulation, black sheep, why the black sheep are the fortunate ones, the benefit to reveal your naked heart, why you're with a narcissist multiple times, and the duality of hopefully the way the culture moves forward, and his favorite ways to do the work. We even talked about triggers and somatic healing. We really covered the breadth of this topic here, so I hope that you enjoy it. Hello, Dawn. Welcome to the show. Nice to meet you.
Likewise. Nice to meet you, Raven, and I'm very much looking forward to this conversation.
Yes. So I would love to ask you, since this is a big part of the episode, typically I don't ask the backstory, but I think this is really important. Can you tell us about your childhood trauma and your story and how you got into this work?
I'd be glad to. It began at the moment of birth. I almost died. The umbilical cord was wrapped around my neck. My mother said it was the consummate skill of the obstetrician who saved my life. So, and then I somewhat facetiously say that it got worse from there. My mother and I, we were very close. Great deal of love between us, but almost every day she would lose it. She had extremely poor impulse control, and so she'd fly into a rage, and you know, her hand, a shoe, something would come across, and it started when I was in infancy, about 11 months. And you know, it went on until I was about 15 and big enough to say, no, you're not going to swing at me anymore.
Yeah.
On the other side, my father was almost a non-presence in my life. We didn't get along that well. It's complicated on how the dynamics among the three of us played out. But suffice it to say, I don't think I ever heard an encouraging word or a word of appreciation or support. And, you know, I was a pretty messed up kid. Of course, I didn't know it. I didn't know that I was messed up until I was in the Air Force and started drinking after a breakup with the relationship, started drinking. And one morning I woke up and realized I need help. I just need to get some help. That was approximately 60 years ago. I'm 80 now, so I was about 20 then. And I found a psychiatrist who worked on Saturdays, and that started a journey that continues to this day.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that you're 80, by the way. Thank you for sharing your age and your wisdom. I would have guessed like 70. So for all of you viewing.
Thank you.
So How did you then? So 15, did you actually tell your mother to stop, or did you move out? Like, there's always that kind of journey.
No, I was just big enough to, grab hold of her arms and say, nope, And when the moment passed, she was fine. But, it was that moment of rage that she couldn't control.
So as a now doctor, what is your, I guess, diagnosis, thinking back to kind of resolve that? Like, why did she do that in your head? Like, did she have a mental illness, or was it just
Well,
emotion?
the illness was poor self-regulation, poor impulse control. And, we can get into what's required for an infant to begin to develop that control, that sense of being able to regulate themselves. So, if they do get frustrated, they can bring it back down. Or if they get low, a little depressed, they don't get stuck there. It doesn't become an emotional habit. They can elevate themselves. So that's basically what I mean by self-regulation.
Right.
So there
And you
was
start
that.
learning at that right in like, I don't know, what age do you start learning emotional self-regulation?
Very, very early on, within the first couple, 3 years of life. The infant does not have the neurological or psychological structures necessary to regulate themselves. So they rely on the caretaker, mother usually, to provide that. And as mother provides that, they begin to embody it themselves. And so if that's not there, and that, boy, that accounts for a great deal of dysfunction. But getting back to my mother, she was a passionate woman who had big dreams when she was an adolescent, becoming a model. She was beautiful and, thought of herself as being able to, but she lived in a very patriarchal immigrant family with six brothers, and she was expected to marry a good Italian guy, and she succumbed. She gave in to that pressure. Whether it was overtly, explicitly stated or not, it was extreme pressure to follow the norm, to do what was expected. She did and resented the living out of it.
Yes. You guys, I told him before that he can cuss and that he's still not cussing. He's so funny.
Okay, I'll
Yes.
tell you why I
Tell us
generally
why.
don't cuss.
Yes.
I don't. I try not to y use a lot of negative energy words because our bodies are primarily liquid water, and water absorbs the energy that's directed at it. And that's the sane reason for not using bad words.
Ooh.
It's not the combination of
So
letters.
I appreciate that. You're not sending me any negative energy, is what you're saying.
Yeah, or any, or to myself.
In
You see,
yourself.
it will affect you and it will affect me.
Okay. Now, if I was told that when I was younger, I might have actually not like tried to not cuss. I was just told that it was, don't take the Lord's name in vain. And I was like, well, I'm going to rebel against that.
Yeah,
I love that.
me too.
Oh. Yes, because you were raised also, you were raised in a Catholic home, and then she was too. That's very Italian.
Yes.
Yeah. And I wanted to address the pressure because I think we still feel that. We think that we're
Oh,
evolved
yes.
and we've kind of like shifted out of that collectively, but there's still so much patriarchy. There's still so much pressure to make your family structure happy by not being, I guess you could say, the black sheep, which a lot of us who are listening identify as the black sheep. So there's a lot of guilt, like, oh, I'm going my own right path. So
They're
that is
the
something.
fortunate ones, Raven.
Yeah. We need to focus on that because it can feel really painful. We feel like
Oh.
our unit, our family, who I guess is it because it's our not I guess it is our ego structure, right? Like our structure of who raised us from infancy to human, to being a human. It's you feel like you're betraying that tribe. Can you touch
Yes.
more on that? Like you say we're the lucky ones, but how do we like shift into feeling that more genuinely?
Well, I think, that's a very important understanding, and also important to recognize how powerful that force is, to disobey or to step out of the norms and mores of the tribe, the family. That takes a lot. Most succumb to it, incorporate the ideology of the family, and live it out the rest of their lives. And that has profound implications for how society functions. Now, to step out takes a lot of guts. Often it's a lot of pain. The person just doesn't fit, doesn't feel good, doesn't feel like he or she belongs, and is in conflict about it. And when they do step out, there's often a lot of disturbance and a lot of flack that comes. And so it takes a lot to step out.
It does. It takes a lot of courage. But like as your mother is an example, if you stay, then you are resentful and you're
Yep.
unhappy.
Oh, yeah. And you make a lot of other people miserable at the same time. And yeah, she's an example of what happens when you stay, and I'm an example of what happens when you leave. For example, when I first announced that I was getting divorced back in 1972, my mother made her whole family, all those brothers and sister-in-laws and husband, promise that they would not notify me if she died. That's how radical a severance she insisted on. Now, 7, 8 years later, she sent returned my Christmas cards unopened.
So she
And
cut you off
about 8
because
years later,
you divorced. That was a big
I stepped
thing.
out of that box. And then later, much later on, I realized I did what she wanted to do. And
She
it
was like
drove her
jealous
crazy.
deep down inside, right?
Deep down, I did that. I got out of there, and she didn't.
You didn't get to.
Yeah, it gets complex.
It really is complex, and we could sit here all day psychoanalyzing all the things. But, and I wanted to ask you, let's say someone doesn't have memories of their childhood or their childhood trauma, but something feels off. Like you said, it kind of feel like the black sheep. Are there certain signs that you have experienced childhood trauma within someone?
Well, I think you named two things in your question. Something feels off. Something doesn't feel right. Maybe you've done all the right things. You went to the right schools. You married the right kind of person. You had the requisite number of children. You've got stock, get a portfolio, and something feels off. Something doesn't feel right.
You talk about it being in the body too, in your book, right? So
Yeah, when you check into the body, you can feel sometimes an emptiness, like there's nothing there around your heart. Maybe, your marriage looks good on the surface. Maybe you even have a decent sex life. But what you probably don't have is a space in which to take off, emotionally speaking, take off all your clothing and reveal your naked heart.
So there's like this unknowing guard around your heart, like armor and clothing, and you just keep it up.
Well
Therefore,
said, Raven. Well said.
So you never
And
really get super vulnerable or connected to somebody if you have that trauma.
right, on a sustained basis.
Sustained basis.
Which means you can hold the other person's changes, growth. Okay. You don't have to try and keep them to be the same person over 30 years because it's stifling. Over 30 years, over 10 years, we're going to change.
Yeah, that's
And to be
inevitable.
able to change with another.
I feel like a lot of us have experienced a relationship that's stifling like that with a narcissist, where they're always trying to control the scenario and they don't ever want to change, even though we've brought up the same problem over and over, thinking that like the 50th time talking about it will actually motivate them to change. So that is in turn what they've experienced in having that armor up around their heart.
Was there a question there or
No, it's just a contemplative thought process. I was going to ask you, so this I can, maybe because I'm on the other side, I can really see these symptoms play out with a narcissist. But we're also, like, we love to introspect here. What if someone is a victim of abuse because maybe they've also experienced abuse in childhood? How does that play out when they are, their heart is guarded, and or they've experienced childhood trauma?
Here's my perspective. Here's where I'll bring in a spiritual perspective. And it's this: we tend to bring into our lives people, situations, events that we need to develop certain aspects of ourselves. So, for example, if someone is finding, let's say a woman is finding herself with a narcissist more than once, and it's likely that she's needing to learn to trust her insides and to back herself up. Because if you're with a narcissist, okay, someone who has strong narcissistic tendencies and beyond, okay? If you're with that person, it's hard to feel their heart. It's so guarded. It's so guarded, and it's held in an aura of, invincibility or perfectionism or and so, you know that at some level, you're not receiving the nurturing that you're needing and wanting. And but it's up to you to bring that forward
And
and
ask for it or
either begin
demand
a,
it.
right? Yeah, or begin a change process with that person or leave, right? So that's what I mean. But we tend to have in our lives, some people would say it's all perfect, exactly the way it is, because what we have is what we need.
Would you say that about, let's go back to your childhood and your mother hitting you? Do you have that spiritual perspective about your childhood, or is it just like it is what it is and it sucked?
Yeah, this is a delicate one because, on one hand, it was, look, if I didn't have that childhood, I wouldn't be sitting here in this moment having this wonderful conversation with you. Everything that came before brought me to this moment. Now, would I wish that childhood on my enemies? No. No. Would I say, oh, it was so wonderful? No, I wouldn't. It was done to me. It was challenging. It was terrifying, really. I froze. I was a frozen organism, out of touch with my feelings, impulses. I mean, I've spent 60 years. And yet, there's a sense in which it gave me exactly what I needed to become or to come to where I am now, with the relationship that I have, with my sense of myself. I'm 80 years old. I'm teaching fluid movement to 40-year-olds. Fluid movement meditations to 40-year-olds.
Amazing. You have to tell us what fluid movement is. What is that?
Okay. Well, first of all, we know, biologically speaking, that the body is mostly liquid, about 65 to 70% fluid,
Water,
right?
right? Fluid,
Yeah,
yeah.
water,
Blood, fluid, water, liquid.
blood, interstitial fluid, limb, cerebral spinal fluid, all of that. It's mostly fluid. Well, back in the 60s, a woman by the name of Emily Conrad, who was a dancer, came along and with that biological fact that we're mostly water, she asked the question, how does water move? How does water move? And it doesn't move like a machine. It doesn't move in straight lines. Water spirals. Water undulates as waves. Water pulses. Okay. And
Yeah.
she developed a system of connecting our consciousness deeply into our own body. It's a meditative practice that I've been at for 29, 30 years, and I consider myself an advanced beginner. And, I'm sure there are meditators, Vipassana, Zen meditation, Buddhist meditation, where, a meditator will say, yeah, I've been doing it for 40 years. I'm still a beginner. Still, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can
The
go on
wise
and on.
ones, the non-arrogant ones. Yes.
Yes, the
It's
non-arrogant
the
one.
duality. And that's exactly what I was going to say before I asked you the question about what is that? Is this concept of it sucked and it was there for some sort of soul connected reason.
Those three letters that you spoke, A, N, D, and are a key to getting to the next level of consciousness. It's hard to have deeply intimate, sustained, deeply intimate emotional relationships without the recognition of that word and. Okay. Yes, it sucked. It absolutely sucked. And I turned it into gold. Both are true.
And you've got my
And
wheels spinning over here. Absolutely. Both are true.
in a relationship, I'm absolutely monogamous. And I'm absolutely not. If you attempt to just cut one side out, stifling.
I
If you
think that's
attempt to,
why. Go ahead, sorry, I interrupted you.
and then the culture comes along and we get into polyamory, we're swinging from one side to the other. and not understanding, that's not going to work either. The heart is too tender. Okay. And to have the deepest connections, we have to reach that tenderness. But to hold both, to be able to say, and how does that play out?
And having experienced childhood trauma, it is difficult to be able to hold your heart open in your hand, being vulnerable with somebody, and at the same time guarding it up so that you aren't stabbed in the heart. That seems like a
Yeah,
very
it
difficult
is
dance.
difficult. And the more trauma, the more difficult it is. Again, one of the main points that I like to make is that at the level of our species development, okay, this is how it comes down. This is how the cultural values get transmitted through the family to the children. Okay. But the culture is not at that level where they can embrace and this and this. Recognizing another thing, recognizing the importance of relationship. That's the next level. We're still at that level of individual identity. Who am I? And trying to figure that out. And
And who are they, right? They are not within my tribe, so therefore there is no and. It's either or, black
you
or
got
white.
it. You got it. Yep.
I mean, it's so obvious. You can see it on the world stage right
Yeah,
now.
you can. Those who can see it.
Yeah. And for me, I'm just sitting back here with the popcorn. I'm like, just, oh, something's gonna like blow up, just like a relationship, right? Like something really bad has to happen in a relationship for you to wake up and leave.
Yeah, I'm going to argue
Oh.
with you on that one, Raven. I don't think you're just sitting there
Well, it's true.
eating popcorn. I think you're part of the solution.
I hope I am.
I think you're part of those attempting to really wake up and get it, and get it that we're stuck. We're stuck. We've taken, we have to move. And it's a matter of doing your work. Or not. If you don't, then you keep your fingers crossed that you incorporated some healthy values, concepts, behaviors, attitudes, because what you bought from your family is what you're living in your life.
I would
But
have to say that I was raised really well. And on the outside, my neighbor's like, oh, you have a really great foundation. Like, you're such a nice person. But on the inside, on the intimate psyche of myself, it's like I had so much to work on and rewrite and things that I did not want to repeat as a mother in, my family. And I think that's supposed to be how things evolve. But we all kind of slap a, oh, it's so great kind of
Well,
paint
you
over.
summarized it. You just summarized what I said beautifully. It's a great example because, by all appearances, you had great family. Everything was fine. But on the inside, and I really admire people who do their work when things were good, like you just described, because it's so easy to not. It's so easy to skate. It's like, hey, I didn't have any trauma in my life, everything was cool. So.
Yeah, there were definitely some events that were traumatizing. And it's as simple as, one bully, but the other there's a
Yeah.
few others, but then it's like, but that also I felt like that set the stage, maybe my naivety as well, or wherever, you know, like the stage was perfectly set. For me to meet that narcissist. And that was the major trauma that occurred in my life, that constant emotional abuse over and over, that constant, like, you are not good enough. And it just reinforced, like you said, you bring in what you want to grow and evolve. And it reinforced that within me. And I had to bust out of that. I had to break free from that and rewrite my own
Well,
narrative.
I admire you. That takes courage to do that.
Thank you. So tell me, what is one of your favorite ways to do the work, to work on yourself, to give them an example of the work?
Oh, there are, Well, my movement practice, the movement meditation practice is definitely one of them. Because one of the things that happens w with time and commitment and practice is you begin to feel the deliciousness of simply moving your body. So, I can move my head from side to side in such a slow and easy way that can really start to feel physically feel good. So that's one big one. And always looking at what upsets me. Always looking what's underneath it. If I get irritated with someone, especially if there's not really an apparent reason, to ask myself, what is it about that person, what's the quality that I'm reacting to? And then how does that quality sit in me? Am I denying my own whatever?
Yeah, that's a really good one for us who are dealing with narcissists as well, because they are so good at getting us to react, because that's how they control us. So it's like, what are you reacting to, and how are you reacting? Should you react? And or yeah, like what's coming out of your feelings within this? And sometimes it just is just infuriation because they're just pushing your buttons. But there is something deep down inside. I like that, right? Because when we get upset, there is something deeper. Let's say just in a normal relationship, where that's how we grow. We all trigger each other, and we get to assess, oh, where did that come from? And then do the work.
Well, here's my take with triggers. I think there are couple of stages to this. So, for example, in the last few years, I've been able to stay untriggered in those moments where my wife gets really pissed at me.
And
You know
that's a
those
big
moments?
childhood trauma trigger for you, right? Because
Oh,
that
oh.
that was like hell broke loose when you're
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But that's 50 plus years of work to get to that point. But here's an interim goal that I will give to people, and it's a big one of the big keys for a successful relationship. And that is to see how quickly you can let go of the trigger. Now, sometimes people take 2 days. If that's the case with you, don't judge yourself for it. Observe it. Recognize it.
Yeah.
Be compassionate towards it and see if you can reduce it to 1 day. And when you've got that down, when you've reduced it to 1 day, go for 2 hours. Until you get to the point where you don't even get triggered.
Yeah.
Now,
And the great thing about when you're dealing with someone healthy is you can come back to them and say, gosh, that really made me upset. Because if you can find the root, then you can even share the root. Why, and then you bring them this information. But I guess this is a really great litmus test, too. If you bring this information to someone who is not healthy and you need to probably cut ways, then they will then just make more excuses about how they're feeling versus actually listening to you bringing them these feelings.
Right. It's an important test. Absolutely. And yeah, that's all I've got on that for the moment.
I love it. Yeah, triggers are
Yeah.
great to have us that what's beneath the surface, what's bothering you.
Yeah.
And
Oh,
go ahead.
well, one more thing on that. People might respond to what I just said about not getting triggered by saying, yeah, you just want me to roll over.
Okay.
And it's not about rolling over. It's about standing firm in your center and having access to your internal resources so that you are capable of dealing with the situation in an effective way.
Beautifully said. Because as you're saying that, I'm thinking there could be two results out of res resolving your trigger and being able to address what happened is number one. Well, the first thing you say, you get your power, but the first result is you get closer in that conversation with your partner. The second result is you draw boundaries and you stand your ground more and you say no, right? Just because you dissolve a trigger doesn't mean that you're being a doormat. Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you. So when you did you find that you had issues with your anger? Did you kind of model that from your mother, or was that something that was not a part of you at all and you kind of went opposite in your relationships as an adult?
No, I had challenges with my anger, and especially if I drank alcohol, because I was supposed to be a good kid. That was the overarching command in my household. You bring a cop to my door and I'll kill you. You get This one would be said with a knife under my chin, you get a girl pregnant and I'll kill you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
That's a lot
talking
of pressure.
serious stuff here,
Yeah.
Raven.
No, you definitely experienced some intense abuse there.
Some intense, that's no joke. And so on one hand, I was well trained to be good, but when triggered, that internal rage would burst and alcohol would facilitate that loss of control. I mean, barroom fights and things like that.
So what did you do to work through that in order to be able to have this long, successful, healthy relationship with your wife?
It's my life story, and I put it into four different categories. The
Want to hear about that. I
yeah,
want to hear
well,
about that because you wrote about that. You wrote about that in your book.
and yeah, I think it's important that people realize that you see, recovering from that kind of abuse is considered to be in the domain of psychology or psychiatry, which has as at its disposal talk therapy and medication. Right? And many years ago, while in graduate school, and after about 10 years on and off of talk therapy, I came to the unequivocal conclusion that talk therapy is insufficient, not enough.
Yeah, it really isn't.
And years went by, and I came to four components. The first is somatic, one's connection to one's body. And that literally requires finding ways to release the chronic tension. give you one good reason. There are many, but I'll give you one. That tension serves as a feedback mechanism to the limbic system of the brain, which in turn, okay, sets the threshold for firing the fight flight mechanism, sets that threshold lower and makes it harder to turn it off. Is that clear? The tension in the body, chronic tension that we all carry, goes back to the limbic system and keeps it primed to set off fight flight. In other words, you get triggered quicker and with less provocation.
Right. It's like the gas always on, or like a light gas pedal. It's always open.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. So that's the somatic. We need to come into the body. We need to, there's more, and I've talked about it in my book. I talk about continuum and I talk about structural integration, different names, Rolfing, Heller work, to help the body, to help that level of the of healing. Okay. Then there's the psychological emotional, which we've been talking about since we began. You know, it involves getting in touch with what we've come to believe before we were 4 years old. Things like the world is not safe, I'll never get my needs met, if I get close to someone, I'll suffocate, I can't be close and free at the same time. Those become the operating principles in our relationships. So that level has to be addressed deeply. And related to that, but I'm putting it as a separate component because of its importance, is the relational level. You know, how to speak from the heart. You know, how to listen. We only learn to listen, you know. Without being defensive, without being inside our heads, trying, you know, preparing our answer before the other person's half finished speaking. And then there's the spiritual level. And, you know, for me, psychedelics have been an important part of that component to help me connect. One of the most important spiritual understandings is that we're not simply these egocentric, separate selves, unrelated to nature, unrelated to each other, to ourselves, because we are also nature, you see, and related also to some higher source of intelligence, a higher source of wisdom.
So did ayahuasca help you with that? Or I think people also microdose. What it was that specifically?
Yeah, I've been a member in more recent years, a teacher in a Christian ayahuasca church.
Oh, interesting. Wouldn't think those two together.
You wouldn't. I know. You wouldn't.
Open-minded. I love that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's very good. So we have, go through the first one again.
Somatic.
Somatic. The emotional.
Yes. Yeah, psychological, emotional.
The spiritual.
Relationship and spiritual.
Oh, relationship is third and spiritual is fourth.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, those, I mean, it has to be a full, complete, overarching wholeness. And is this what you mean by being whole? Because you talk about being whole, but also wholeness is flexible. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, I don't think wholeness is an end state. I don't think we reach a place where we can say, now I'm whole. I think it's an evolving process that recognizes our somatic nature, our psychological, emotional nature, our spiritual, our relational and spiritual nature that recognizes all of those components and aims to nurture and develop more wisdom, comprehension in all four of those. You know, and I say it's an adventure of a lifetime. And privately, I also wonder if it's an adventure of many lifetimes.
I was just going to ask you if you believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of do. I kind of do. I can't say, look, Raven, here's my evidence, you know, other than a lot of people that I respect, you know, claim that to be true from their own knowing, from their own experience. So, you know, I completely open to the possibility. It makes sense because, you know, I've been at this for 60 years and still feel like a beginner in many ways.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping I'm going to get another go round and I can start where I leave this one.
Absolutely. I think that we evolve as we go in each one. That's kind of how I've understood it. And again, there's no solid, like I've been there so I can speak, but exactly from my knowing, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And then where do we find your book? How can we connect with you?
Okay, let's start with my website, which is www.pathsofconnection.com.
Okay.
PathsofConnection, pathsofconnection.com. My book, if I may hold it up.
Yes, please.
Can be purchased on my website, on Amazon.com. I think wherever books are sold, it can be ordered. Yeah.
It's been an incredible conversation with you. You've brought some really deep wisdom, and I appreciate you being here on the podcast.
I love this conversation. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Remember, a conversation is a two-way activity. And I really enjoyed this one. So thank you.
Thank you. Me too. What an incredible story and resilience that Dawn has. And what a journey to find yourself dealing with childhood trauma, alcoholism, rage, and being able to shift that into a beautiful movement and modality and a really amazing alchemized lifestyle and work. Amazing. Let me know what you think and how this episode made you feel. You can DM me on Instagram at Empath and the Narcissist Podcast. Calling all empaths on your healing journey. If you haven't joined the newsletter already, feel free to do so by grabbing any of the free offerings, the workshop, your human design chart, and also the boundaries workshop that I've created. If you subscribe and write a review to either of my books, Empath's Guide to Rising Strong and Empath and the Narcissist, I will give three lucky subscribers a two-hour human design reading coaching session valued at $500. And I will also send you a signed paperback copy of my newest book, Empath's Guide to Rising Strong. You will need to do this before March 30th in order to enter to win these two offerings. So help me write a review and continue to share the love and share the empowerment. You can read the free Empath's Guide to Rising Strong ebook in the link in the description. And on that note, I would love to share with you a review. A Great Journey into Human Design. This workbook serves as a versatile toolbook kit for everyday life, enriched with captivating meditations and compelling stories that seamlessly immerse the reader into the realm of human design. Raven's writing style feels as if she's sitting across a table talking to you. Her authenticity, humility, and sincere commitment to guiding individuals on their journey to rise strong clearly resonates throughout these pages. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to this podcast. Please help us grow and reach more survivors that are seeking spiritual growth by sharing this and tagging me at Empath of the Narcissist Podcast on Instagram. You can even send it via text. However you want to share it, you go share away. And don't forget to subscribe. Hey, if you're feeling extra generous, please write a review to the podcast. This really does help in social proof. We're up to 100 reviews. I never thought I'd ever see that number. So thank you so much for that. So speaking of ads and offerings, you can dive deeper with me through my first book, Empath and the Narcissist. It is a profound exploration of my story, my healing journey, and a whole bunch of different elements that I've discovered on my healing path to help you heal from narcissistic abuse and empower you. So you can also listen to that on Audible. My second book is a new book baby. It is Empath's Guide to Rising Strong. And you can grab your paperback of that human design guidebook. And as always, we'll see you tomorrow in an episode. Remember, always keep your unique light shining.